Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a stack of resources that might seem, a bit dry on the surface. We're talking architectural standards, biological papers, field notes, and we're going to synthesize them into something really actionable.
And surprisingly beautiful in its own way.
I think so, yeah. We're diving deep into the meticulous world of long-term tree management with a special focus on a really critical early intervention technique called formative pruning.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just about trimming branches to make things look neat. It's about shaping the entire future of a tree right from the start.
It is. I mean, we're talking about guiding young trees so they grow up to be these structurally sound giants. It's all about minimizing risk and really maximizing their lifespan.
One of our sources had this perfect phrase for it, and I love it, called formative pruning, a healthy childhood for trees.
That's the one. It's a perfect analogy. You put in the time and the surgical precision early on, and you basically set the tree up to avoid needing what the source called major surgery later on. It's the ultimate preventative care.
I love that. So, okay, our mission for this deep dive is clear then.
Yeah.
We're going to extract the precise professional standards, the specific rules arborists use. We want you to walk away from this understanding exactly how a professional ensures a mature tree is free from, well, predictable defects.
Exactly. Not just dead branches. We're moving way past simple aesthetics, making a tree look tidy. This is structural engineering for a living thing.
Okay, let's unpack that, the structural engineering part. Because when most people look at a young tree, they just think, it looks fine. Why mess with it? If the goal isn't just tidiness, what's the fundamental reason we intervene so early?
The whole why really boils down to mitigating long-term risk. It's all about structural integrity down the road.
So a tree can look healthy,
yeah,
but be growing wrong.
It absolutely can. It could be quietly developing a growth pattern that pretty much guarantees it's going to fail, maybe decades later. The whole point of formative pruning is to guide the tree's natural growth to produce a structure that is specifically free from those major defects.
And what kind of defects are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about eliminating those hidden failure points. Things you can't really see in a sapling, but that become enormous liabilities in a 60-foot mature tree. Things like included bark, those really tight, weak V-shaped forks, or just general structural imbalances.
So it's a proactive defense against storm damage and failure.
It is. It's defense against failure, decay, all of it.
Okay. So it's not guesswork. This isn't just an arborist making an educated guess about what looks right. You mentioned this is highly standardized.
Right.
What's the standard we need to know about that guides this whole thing?
The international benchmark that professionals really rely on is BS3998.2 years and 10.
Yes, 3998.
Yep. It's the British standard for tree work, but honestly, it's recognized globally as the rigorous methodology for this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
It dictates the entire process, the planning, the timing, the cuts themselves, and it's all focused on one outcome, a stable, resilient, long-lived tree.
That's fascinating. Because when you bring in a specific standard like that, you know there's a repeatable, measurable process behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings up the question of timing. You can't just start stressing out a tiny sapling right after you plant it. So what's the consensus on when you should actually start this formative pruning work?
Right. There's a standard timeline for that. And it's dictated by the tree's biology. Generally, you resume formative pruning about 3 to 5 years after the tree's been planted.
Resume. Why resume?
Well, good point. It often gets an initial prune at the nursery, but that 3 to 5 year window gives the tree time to properly establish its root system, get over the transplant shock, and just settle in. You don't want to shape a stressed tree.
But waiting 3, 4, even 5 years, that seems like a long time for problems to start developing. Are there ever times we have to intervene sooner?
Oh, absolutely. That 3 to 5 year rule is really only if the tree is growing reasonably well. Our sources highlight two specific kind of non-negotiable exceptions that would trigger an immediate intervention.
Ah, okay. This is where it gets interesting. So what are those red flags? What tells you, no, we can't wait. We need to get the shears out now.
The first one is pretty simple. It's just directional growth. If a young tree starts growing in a significantly wrong direction, leaning way too much, or heading straight for a power line or a building, you've got to correct that immediately.
We nudge it back on course.
You do. You reposition the central leader. The second one, though, is structurally the most critical. It's if the tree starts developing multiple competing leaders.
Okay, I can see why that might be bad.
Yeah.
But explain it. Why is 2 or 3 leaders a problem? Doesn't that just mean more leaves, more energy? It sounds almost positive, you know?
It sounds positive, but for the tree's longevity, it's the opposite. When you have two leaders competing for dominance, they almost always form this very tight V-shaped fork.
Right.
And as they grow thicker over the years, they start pushing against each other and they trap bark between them. That's called included bark. And that union is incredibly weak.
Ah.
If you look at big trees that have just split right down the middle in a storm,
right.
9 times out of 10, that failure point was a tight V-fork that started when the tree was young.
So it's like a giant zipper just waiting for a strong wind to pull it apart years later.
That's a perfect way to put it. You have to resolve that competition when the stems are still small and manageable.
This brings us really nicely to the practical side, the how. We've got the standard BS3998, and we've got the timing. Mm. So let's get into what you call the surgical part. What are these golden rules for successful formative pruning?
Right. There are 4 main rules, and they're all designed to make sure every single cut serves a structural goal, but without harming the tree's overall health. It's about being precise with minimal intervention.
Okay, what's rule number one?
Rule number one is all about energy. It's about volume removal. The goal is to always keep at least 2/3 of the tree's total height as live crown.
2/3? What 2/3 specifically? I mean, if I'm trying to guide growth, I might be tempted to just strip off all the lower side branches to push all the energy up top.
And that temptation is exactly what this rule is designed to prevent. The live crown, you know, where all the leaves are, that's the tree's engine room. It's where photosynthesis happens.
It's making the food.
It's making the food the tree needs to grow and, crucially, to heal from the cuts we're making. If you take off too much crown, you essentially starve the tree. You stunt its growth and you make it vulnerable.
Mm.
That 2/3 minimum is a biological safety break.
That is such a useful benchmark. Okay, that leads us to rule number 2, which I think really defines that minimal intervention idea you mentioned. What's the size limit we have to stick to?
This one is key. We strictly avoid making cuts on branches that are thicker than 20 millimeters.
20 millimeters? Wait, that's less than an inch?
Yep, less than an inch. Unless it is an absolute emergency, like a dangerous branch,
yeah.
You stay under that limit.
Wow. Okay, that number really drives the point home. If the problem has grown bigger than your thumb, the window for true formative pruning is basically closed. You're already in major surgery territory then.
That's the takeaway. And that 20 millimeter limit isn't just some random number. It's rooted in a biological process called CODI, compartmentalization of decay in trees.
Right, CODI. Trees don't heal like we do. They can't replace damaged tissue. Instead, they wall off the wound to stop decay from spreading into the trunk. The smaller the wound, so 20 millimeters or less, the faster and more effectively the tree can build that wall.
So making bigger cuts just opens the door for rot to get in.
It skyrockets the risk. Staying under that threshold is a hallmark of good long-term preventative care. It explains the urgency of getting in there early.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So what's rule number 3?
Rule 3 is probably the easiest one to visualize. It's all about friction.
Like when two branches are rubbing against each other.
Exactly. If two branches are crossing or rubbing, one of them has to be removed. That constant friction wears away the bark, creating an open wound.
It's an invitation for pests and disease.
A direct invitation. You're preventing a tiny rub mark today from becoming a deep, infected, weak part of the tree years from now. It's an easy fix for a guaranteed future problem.
And that brings us to the last one, rule 4, which goes back to that conflict you mentioned earlier, the competing leaders. How do we fix that without just lopping one off and leaving a huge wound?
The strategy is usually not total removal. Where you have that weak fork or two leaders competing, you selectively reduce one of them. You find the weaker one or the one that's in a worse position and you prune it back. Shorten it.
So you're not eliminating it, you're just demoting it.
That's a great way to put it. You're reducing its dominance. By doing that, you divert the tree's energy away from it, which allows the other leader, the one you want, to naturally take charge, thicken up, and become that strong single central stem. You prevent that weak V from ever really forming.
It's amazing how those 4 rules, the 2/3 crown for energy, the 20 millimeter limit for healing, no friction, and one leader, how they all just work together.
They do. They're all small, minimal interventions, but they're all done with that 50-year goal in mind. It's well-timed pruning with a clear structural objective every single time.
And for you, listening at home, connecting this to the bigger picture is key. Formative pruning, when it's done right, drastically reduces the need for future interventions.
And costly ones at that.
Exactly. You prevent a weak joint when it's the size of your finger, so you don't have to hire a crane and a crew to take down a massive, dangerous limb hanging over your house 20 years from now.
It really is the cheapest long-term insurance policy you can buy for your trees. You're securing a strong, beautiful structure, and you're managing the risk that comes with having large trees in an urban space.
This has been a fascinating deep dive. We've seen that following a clear standard like BS 3998.201 NOM and sticking to those four simple rules, especially staying under that 20 millimeter cut limit, is the professional way to ensure safety and a long life for our trees.
It's all about being proactive.
So for our final thought, the whole idea hinges on preventing major defects by dealing with tiny issues when the tree is young. So how does understanding that strict 20 millimeter thickness limit, that biological constraint, how does that change your perspective on the window of opportunity you have? That limit tells you just how narrow and how critical that window for truly preventative minimal impact care really is.
Think proactive, act small, and reap the benefits of a structurally sound giant later.
Until next time, keep digging deeper.